So before we kick things off, we only have to do it the right way. Let's just get the sponsor of this episode going here. Tell us about yourself, Greg. Tell us what you offer, pal.
Yeah. So if you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster, and you're looking to grow your show, you can submit an episode to Indie Drop-In. We will play the full episode of your show to an embedded base of listeners looking for your content. Then if they like you, they'll follow you. And guess what? It's 100% free. I actually pay Tanner and Jeff to get your content. If you can believe that. I don't know how I got roped into being the creator of Indie Drop-In, but I will like to promote your show. How was that, Jeff?
That's good. Tanner, what do you think?
I think you did a better job than I do.
Definitely does a better job than I do. I can hardly even talk.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you do a great job. I've heard your ads so many times that now I just replay them in my head. But for anyone interested in submitting a show, just go to indiedropin.com/creators. Just follow the form and I'll take it from there.
Have you been searching for a podcast? Do you want to learn from some great content creators? Well, you've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, Jeff Townsend, the Indie Podcast Father.
Hi, and welcome to Indie Podcaster. My name is Neil Headley. I'm the Creative Services Director from Knopf Studios, and I was honored to get a note from my friend Jeff asking me to fill in for him on this episode. Well, Jeff knows me from his spectacular Twitter space called the Podcasting Power Hour, Monday nights at 9 Eastern, but I guess he also kind of likes the show I do called The Voice in My Head. It's about 10 minutes every week that covers the things that have caught my attention as a radio and television guy with more than 40 years of experience on both sides of the glass. Now, Jeff cherry-picked three short episodes of my show to share with you here. They cover everything from marketing to podcasting to golf. If you dig these three, there are more of them waiting for you on my website at knopstudios.com, with season two starting August 29th. You can also reach me there if you need a hand with editing, production, writing, voice work, however I can help. And with that, and a hearty helping of gratitude to Jeff, here you go. My lifetime ban from the Podcasting Cool Kids Club. Hi, I'm Neil Headley. Welcome to The Voice in My Head for Monday, June 13th, 2022. I haven't officially been banned yet, but once this hits the interwebs, it won't take long. The first time I spoke into a microphone in front of an audience, it was 1974. I was in third grade, and as part of a homework assignment, I was giving a speech in front of our whole school on a particular dialect of British English that's specific to the northeast of England, where the people are known as Geordies. I did about 8 minutes of what essentially was stand-up comedy, translating Geordie phrases into plain English. Well, I was hooked by the whole microphone experience. Less than 10 years later, I was working as a DJ on the radio, and by 1985, I was doing actual stand-up. So I've been speaking into microphones and recording, mixing, and editing other people who speak into microphones for nearly 50 years. And the bottom line is this. I know beyond anyone's reasonable ability to debate what a good microphone sounds like and what a bad microphone sounds like. I mean, I'm not quite at the level of expertise possessed by my old friend Bob Deutsch, who once had to FedEx a U-47 to Ireland because Bono insisted on using that specific microphone to record the vocals for The Unforgettable Fire in this mossy, mildewy old castle. But I know a good mic from a bad one. Here comes the line that will get me forever banned from the Podcasting Cool Kids Club, and most podcasters have a sense of who the cool kids think they are. The line of unforgivable heresy is this. The podcast you're listening to right now was recorded on a $20 microphone. Nope, didn't get it at a garage sale or inherit it from a long-deceased relative. Bought it brand new for $20. Even more horrific to the podcasting Illuminati, I bought it off Amazon. And the death blow to my future as a Podcasting Cool Kids Club member? It's a lapel mic. What I'm beginning to understand, much to my disappointment, is that there are some, just a few in the podcast space that have set forth kind of a nebulous list of minimum requirements for podcast production, kind of the same way your computer has minimum requirements to run a particular piece of software. The implication is that anything less than these minimums will result in an unworthy show that's unlistenable. What that's resulted in is the deliberate construction of false barriers to entry. You have to spend a certain amount on your microphone, they'll say. And you need to spend money on software to produce your podcast, or have a certain amount of technological prowess to allow you to navigate the feature sets of the freebies. And heaven forbid you should use one of those free podcast hosting services. How gauche. Next, you'll be telling the elitists that you don't plan on spending hundreds of dollars on acoustic foam for your dedicated recording space. Oh, the horrors. As a person who's been in broadcasting at a very high level since the early 1980s on both radio and television, here's what I will tell you with indisputable certainty. If you've booked an interview with Ryan Reynolds or Mick Jagger or even the ridiculously overexposed Elon Musk, and I mean overexposed in about three different senses of the word, and they're doing the interview through a drive-through speaker, there will still be tons of people who will listen. And I'll additionally promise you this, that at least 90% of the people who will be critical of the audio quality of your Mick Jagger interview will be people in the podcast industry. Rolling Stones fans want to hear what Mick Jagger has to say, and the only thing they care about is that Mick sounds good enough that they can easily understand what he's saying. No, you know what? Wait. In fact, they don't even care about that because they're not thinking about it. They're not thinking about it at all, unless his audio is so garbled and distorted that you can't understand him. That's the only time audio quality even occurs to them. They don't care if his audio is at 384K or 32K, as long as they can hear it. They won't write a scathing review about how you obviously didn't use the low-end roll-off switch on your RE20. It's like most anything else. You don't notice something until it is obviously wrong. You don't notice the day-to-day function of your left knee, for example, until your left knee hurts. You don't think about the marvels of your charger cable until the cable stops working properly. You only think about the functionality of your can opener when it's not opening cans anymore. Now, if that concept is anathema to you, that listeners don't tend to think at all about audio quality unless it sucks, that's okay. It happens to everybody at one point or another, to tons of people I know who are legends in their respective media, whether that's podcasting, TV, movies, radio, whatever. It happens multiple times, regularly even. In radio, we used to describe it as having to remember how to listen like a listener. You spend long enough as a broadcaster, you forget how to listen and evaluate things the way that the average listener would. It's why, as I've said before, you will get tired of your intro theme or, you know, the jingle in your commercials in about a tenth of the time it'll take before the audience gets tired of it. Why? Because they don't hear it the same way you do. You're coming at it from different places. It reminds me of the first time I saw the movie The Return of the Jedi. I saw it in a theater with my friend Rob Petrovitz, who was seeing it without a word of hyperbole for something like the 44th time. Now, that's not to be critical of Rob in any way. He went on to become a massive deal in science fiction television. But for me that day, it meant that in the middle of one of the climactic battle scenes, Rob leans over and says, "Look, you can see the reflection of the camera crew and C-3PO's head." Shut up, Rob. I'm trying to watch a movie. But we were there for different reasons. I was there to watch the story unfold. Rob was there to nitpick the technical details because the technical details were his passion. A passion that turned into an award-winning career. To him, the story was secondary because the passion for him was in the behind-the-scenes part of telling the story. The dirty little secret that the gurus won't admit to is this. Your fans don't love your audio quality. They love your content. If you don't have fans, or you don't know how to convert listeners into fans, or don't know how to even do the kind of content that gets fans, there is no microphone in the world that can save you, not even Bob Deutsch's U47, which I think he's still cleaning the moss out of. I've quoted this number before, and if my math is wrong, please feel free to correct me on the numbers, but something like 150 million people a week still listen to talk radio in the United States. And on talk radio, about half the airtime is taken up by people who are on the phone. No one cares about the audio quality of the people on the phone because the talk radio audience isn't there for audio quality. They're there for content. The self-appointed gatekeepers seem to want you to forget that in the majority of cases, your audio is being delivered after having been converted from actual audio to a low-resolution digital file, which is then being broadcast across a Bluetooth radio signal into earbuds with a limited frequency response, likely in a place where the listener is also dealing with a ton of ambient noise. So really, gatekeepers, just how good are you demanding that this recording should be? What I'm demonstrating to you right now, much to the chagrin of the Podcasting Cool Kids Club, is that you can do a show with audio quality that is perfectly acceptable with a $20 microphone. And I can back that assertion up with nearly 50 years of experience with microphones that cost everywhere from $18 to $1,800. Pretending that you need something better and erecting false barriers to entry is preventing us from hearing from potentially powerful voices in already marginalized communities. So before you run to your powerful keyboard and start a Twitter movement in support of my lifetime ban from the Podcasting Cool Kids Club, maybe stop for a second and examine whether your perspective is the result of your privilege. That gets us to the end of episode 19 of The Voice in My Head. Listen, if anything about what I just said would inspire you to pick up the tab if we went shopping for $20 microphones together, feel free to buy me a virtual coffee instead. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/knopp. And knopp is spelled K-N-O-P-P. You can also find a transcript of this episode and a bunch of other goodies at knoppstudios.com. Details going to be coming very soon on one of those You Spoke, We Listened kind of deals with regard to our Copywriting 101 course as well. But to talk to me about that or whatever else is on your mind, my email address is Neil, that's N-E-I-L, at knoppstudios.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Voice in My Head. I'm Neil Headley.
Most of you listening to this are aware that I have a different conversation that I share every single episode. Well, I've discovered an amazing tool that's helping me do that in the best quality, simplistic, great way possible. Boomcaster. I've recently made this big change and I was a little nervous at first, but I'm so glad that I did because it's been an amazing experience. If you don't know what Boomcaster is, you really got to look into this because if you are frequently recording conversations on some platform like Zoom, it's just not designed for that. And I'll explain. Boomcaster is actually designed for content creators, podcasters. You can schedule, stream, and record all from one platform. They are just dedicated to indie podcasters and independent content creators. They deliver studio quality audio and video every time, all the time. You can record and live stream to reach the biggest audience possible. Let me explain why you got to get caught up with the times here. Traditional conferencing solutions rely on network speed for each participant. That is not the case with Boomcaster. It saves locally and uploads to the cloud, giving you the freedom to record from anywhere. And that's significant as far as the audio delay and all those things that you experience when you're creating content and recording. Like I said, I know the people at Boomcaster personally, and I vouch for them. They support us indie podcasters. We need to support the independent creators like them. It's time to upgrade to Boom. And you know what? If you use the code IndiePodcaster at checkout, you'll get your 30 days free plus 50% off your first 3 months. That's incredible. If you want to legitimize the content you are creating, you've got to use Boomcaster.
What's your favorite position? Hi, I'm Neil Headley. Welcome to The Voice in My Head for Monday, May 23rd, 2022. A serendipitous conversation with an old radio friend halfway through writing the article that would become this week's episode really drove home for me that this is a conversation we should be having more often. And sorry if the spin on the word position in the title seems kind of clickbaity, but it definitely works in this context for a number of reasons. It relates to one of my favorite books on marketing and advertising, written in 1980 by legends Al Reiss and Jack Trout, called Positioning, The Battle for Your Mind. They'd followed up in 1987 with a gem called Marketing Warfare, two books I'd recommend to literally anyone who has ever had to sell anything to anybody. While we're on the subject, let's get something out of the way nice and early. Everyone on the planet can benefit from having a better understanding of the concept of positioning as it relates to marketing. If you run a car dealership or a hardware store, your product or service is obvious, and whether you succeed or fail will depend largely on your skill at positioning. But I'd argue the same is true for the less obvious among us. Whether you have a podcast or a profile on Plenty of Fish, there are tons of people whose product is themselves, and positioning is just as important for them. In the case of my radio friend, we were bemoaning a radio market we're both familiar with where there's no clear leader among the morning shows. Sure, there's a station that's number one in the ratings, but I mean a leader in the positioning battle. There's no must-listen morning show in this particular market or one that you'll find people talking about on the subway. And I think that that's true in a ton of radio markets as more and more people rise through the ranks in management who don't have an appreciation for the top 40 wars of the 70s and the 80s, where having your show and your station be the subject of water cooler talk was absolutely critical to a show's success and a station's survival. I mean, think about it. When's the last time you saw a morning radio show trending on social media? The only time it seems to happen is when someone on the show has said or done something offensive. Indeed, radio seems to have ceded that ground to podcasting. There are 100 times more stories out there about something that was said on a podcast than there are about anything that's happening on a radio show. Now, in the radio market that my friend and I were discussing, there is no king of the hill, which means that it's a hill that is ready to be taken. What's your position in your industry? In positioning, Trout and Reiss talk about the place you hold in your audience's subconscious. For brands, it's easy to talk about positioning because the market leaders have done a really effective job of it. A Corvette, for example, holds a very different position in the consumer's mind than a minivan. Soy milk is positioned differently than whole milk. Starbucks versus Dunkin' Donuts. Mac versus Windows versus Linux. You get the idea. So what is your position? You should have one. Whether you're in podcasting or auto repair, dentistry or radio, power washing or banking, a position is in many ways similar to a niche, except that a niche can be way more broad and can occupy several competitors. Your niche could be rental cars. Your position could be the rental car company that will come pick up the customer at their home rather than force them to come into a retail location. You might be one of a dozen coffee places in my neighborhood. So coffee place is your niche, but maybe your position is as the place with the barista in the morning who's even perkier than the Sumatra. One of the interesting and sometimes frustrating things about positioning is you're not 100% in control of what that position is. And that's perhaps the greatest difference between your niche and your position. You establish your niche. Your position might be assigned to you. You have complete control of the former, and you can only guide the latter. Successfully, though, if you're applying the right marketing techniques. I think of examples like rental car agencies, especially in the 70s and 80s. Out of the gate, let's establish that rental car agency is the niche. There are some who've drilled down further and, you know, only rent out luxury cars. But once you've chosen the rental car niche, your positioning becomes critical if you're going to succeed. Back in the day, Hertz was the undisputed number one by a landslide. I mean, nobody was ever going to touch Hertz. Then Avis came along with a positioning statement that said, we're number two, so we try harder. Different than just a slogan, we try harder was brilliant positioning because Hertz had accidentally stumbled into the position of sometimes resting on their laurels, phoning it in, if you will, being number one and knowing it to the point of being cocky about it. By more modern turns of phrase, we might have called Hertz big rental. So Avis took the position in the crowded rental marketplace as the ones who, pardon the pun, went the extra mile. Years later, Enterprise would tell us in their positioning statement, we'll pick you up and never let you down. Clever slogan, sure, but an effective positioning statement as well, because now when I think of rental car agencies, they own positions in my mind. Hertz is the biggest. Avis tries harder. Enterprise will pick me up and bring my rental car to me. It's the same in the cell phone world. At a time when providers in a crowded niche were fighting it out on price, but customers were complaining about spotty cell phone coverage, Verizon introduced us to that guy who seemed to be walking all over the country, stopping every few feet to ask, can you hear me now? So whether it was accurate or not, Verizon positioned themselves as the network with the best coverage. They did it so successfully that other providers had to devote time in their commercials toward trying to counter Verizon's claims. Now, thanks to some hilarious commercials by actor Ryan Reynolds, who also owns the company, Mint Mobile has firmly established a position as a solid, low-cost option and as a company that doesn't take itself too seriously. It's the perfect alternative for people who've tired of being screwed over by big mobile and their super rigid corporate policies. I have a dozen options if I want to buy a hammer. Home Depot will have 37 different hammers for me to choose from. Maybe Ace is closer. Because it isn't a massive warehouse, chances are I'll be served by Josie, the manager, who's always super friendly and ready to help. Then again, Crazy Larry's House of Discount Tools probably has a decent hammer for 99 cents. Harbor Freight's probably going to have the same 37 tools, that Home Depot does, and maybe even a few more. And the Harbor Freight guy probably knows exponentially more than any of my other options do. They're all in the tool business, but they all occupy very different positions in my psyche. Your position doesn't necessarily require that you do something different within your niche. Instead, it's more about how people think of you, whether that entails different execution or not. I mean, even this podcast has a position, and it's one that I sought out deliberately. My radio friend and I were talking about the episode called Normalizing Mediocrity, where, among other things, I told podcasters that if their ad rates are lower for commercials that come up in the middle and the end of their show because a big chunk of their audience is gone by the middle of the show, that's not because podcasting is a quirky medium where listeners do unpredictable things. No, it's because the show's not interesting enough to listen to all the way through. My friend said that that line cemented my position as the guy who tells you the truth you need to hear, whether you like hearing it or not. But everyone has a position. Maybe you're not a person who guides the marketing for a Fortune 500 company. Maybe you work in customer service at an insurance company. Okay, so what's your position among your coworkers? What do they think when they think of you? The danger that I described earlier as mere frustration is that if you're not conscious of your position and you're not trying to guide it, a position will be assigned to you that you might not be thrilled about. Quick example of this, and then I'll let you get on with your day. Listerine, far and away, was the number one brand of mouthwash in the world. And then Scope comes along with the two words that would forever change the playing field: medicine breath. Scope was minty fresh. Listerine was a great product, sure, but it made your breath smell medicine-y. Even the name, Listerine, it sounds like medicine, doesn't it? So what is your position within your niche? What do people think of you when they think of you? If you haven't given it conscious thought and you haven't tried on some level to steer that positioning, how do you know that you're not your industry's version of medicine breath? That gets us to the end of episode 17 of The Voice in My Head. Listen, if anything about what I just said would inspire you to pick up the tab if you and I were to sit down for a meeting, feel free, buy me a virtual coffee instead. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/knopp. And Knopp is spelled K-N-O-P-P. I know my friend Dave Jackson likes to stick an F on the end of that. Maybe that's just Dave thinks of me and F pops into his head. You can also find a transcript of this episode and a bunch of other goodies at knoppstudios.com. And hey, if you want, we also get into the finer points of positioning and a bunch of other marketing tools as part of our copywriting course as well that you can find on our website. But to talk to me about that or whatever else is on your mind, my email address is Neil, that's N-E-I-L, at knoppstudios.com. Till next time, thanks for listening to The Voice in My Head. I'm Neil Headley.
Jeff Townsend here, and I'm excited to talk to my good friend Mark Binder. I'm just kidding. His name is Mark Binder. He doesn't like it when I say that. Mark is the creator. I'm going to say owner just because it sounds entrepreneur-y of Podtrix, the podcast hosting platform. Thanks for joining us, man. I'm excited to hear about this new Podtrix feed import feature that you're going to share with me and everybody, the world. Share it with the world, Mark.
World, behold this. The Podtrix feed importer, it's really simple. The Podtrix feed importer is really exciting because it's how you migrate your existing podcast feed to Podtrix hosting. All you got to do is the URL that you would submit to Spotify or Apple or Overcast or whatever, you paste that into the little pop-up that shows up in your show and you say import. The system then goes and will start importing all of your episodes, whether it be 10 episodes or 10,000 episodes. It will pull in every single episode, all of the audio, your descriptions, your categories. Everything is moved into Podtrix seamlessly and is ready for publishing. This feature is already live right now and is available to anybody who wants to use it.
So what we're really here, this is like the big coming out party for all you current podcasters to come on over and check out Podtrix, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everybody's welcome.
You do offer something to the listeners of this podcast.
If you use the code IndiePod during checkout, you'll get 25% off your first 3 months of Podtrix.
That's a good deal.
I'm here to support you guys to be creative. You can contact me by sending an email to hello@podtrix.com. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Well, I encourage everybody to go on to podtrix.com right now and check it out and use the promo code IndiePod to get a little bit of a discount.
What podcasters can learn from their golf game. Hi, I'm Neil Headley. Welcome to The Voice in My Head for Monday, May 30th, 2022. I have a friend who's a long-haul pilot for a major airline. Because his job takes him all over the globe, often with a half a day or more of downtime, he told me he was thinking about taking up golf as a hobby and asked if I would go with him to help him shop for clubs. At the time, I was a good person to ask because I'd been spending a bunch of time with a local rep from a club manufacturer and was toward the end of what would be a streak where I played at least 9 holes every day for 29 days in a row. Now, in retrospect, that streak probably should have stopped by day 24, which I spent as the only one on the course in a 42-degree rainstorm, which probably led to me being too sick to play on day 30. But he told me the budget that he had in mind, which led me to the conclusion that, first of all, airline pilots make a lot more money than I thought they did. But let's pretend, for the sake of nice, round, divisible numbers, that he said he had earmarked $3,000 for this adventure. I told him he shouldn't spend a dime more than $1,500. Let me explain why, because although the title says podcasters, what I'm about to share applies to pretty much any hobby or even any semi-serious venture into a new profession or side hustle, whether it's learning to play golf, learning to cook, or learning to make things out of wood. In the case of my pilot friend, we were absolutely going to spend all of his $3,000 budget. Just not the way he was expecting to. My advice was to spend $1,500 on clubs and the other $1,500 on learning how to use them. Same if you've got $1,000 to spend on your journey toward becoming a chef. Spend $500 on pans and knives and the other $500 on lessons. Budding carpenters, same thing. Spend half on the tools, the other half on the instruction. It's true for a ton of reasons. First of all, spending $1,500 on a set of golf clubs, much like spending $500 on cooking gear or a couple hundred on a microphone, will give you the tools that are good enough to figure out whether this new obsession is something you should even be spending your time on at all. If you get so good at golf that you can legitimately start to wonder whether your $1,500 clubs are holding you back, well, that's when you go all in and buy more expensive stuff. And how do you get good enough to need more expensive gear? Lessons. Build the skills you need to get good. There is not a golfer on the planet, and I will die on this incredibly insignificant hill. Not a golfer on the planet who will not improve as a result of having watched their swing on video with a teacher who can point out exactly what is causing their slice or whatever else is ailing them. And none of the YouTube videos, the DVD sets, or the rounds with your buddies playing for beers will ever help you as much as a skilled professional who's working with you, watching your swing, and figuring out the specific thing that you need to tweak. Don't get me wrong. I would love to make a YouTube video that would teach you how to putt. Frankly, I would love to watch a YouTube video that would teach how to putt, but that's a different conversation. And I would love to have Google stuffing money in my pocket because 3 million people watched a video in the last 2 years that took me 20 minutes to make. But what are the chances that every single one of those 3 million people are lousy at putting for exactly the same reason? That all of them grip the club exactly the same way? That they're all identical heights, weights, and builds? That they all use the same putter? That none of them are left-handed? Look, a YouTube video can show you how to hold a chef's knife. It can't look at how you hold the knife and tweak where you've placed your pinky, or account for your remarkably tiny fingers, or help you figure out whether the 255-gram Wusthof is too heavy and you need to downshift to something about 190 grams. I think we can safely move on from that point because there are other similarities too. One of the things that has been in the rule books on the PGA Tour for as long as anybody can remember is that if you're going to compete in a professional golf tournament, you and your caddy have to walk the course. It's part of the game. Riding in a cart? Well, then you're not really a professional golfer. Part of what separates the pros from the beer cart aficionados is that the pros don't take shortcuts. Nobody on the pro tour pulls out a rangefinder so that they know the precise distance to the hole. If they really need to know, they walk the distance so that they know how far it is. If they want to get a sense of the wind, they don't pull out a portable anemometer. They grab a few blades of grass, toss them up in the air, and they see what the wind does with them. Are there technological shortcuts they could be employing? Sure. But then you're not golfing, at least not at a professional level. Now, like I said at the outset, that metaphor is practically universal. It's inconvenient, but it's universal. If you want the sous chef's job at a Michelin 3-star restaurant, well, your signature recipe had better not include a microwave or a bag of frozen diced onions that you got at Walmart. You build fine furniture out of particle board? I hate to be the one to tell you, but no, you don't. Opinion here that I'm probably going to take some heat for. Shortcuts are rarely used by people who possess the underlying skill. Now, I'll let podcasters fill in their own blanks there, but if you've mastered the art of the hand-tossed pizza crust Well, something ready-made is an insult to your skill set. If you can really sing, you don't need auto-tune. You'll never find one of those Billy bookcases in a carpenter's house, like not even in the kids' room. A business that takes the art of marketing seriously will never have content or a commercial that was written by an artificial intelligence bot. And an airline pilot who hopes to still have a job tomorrow would never dream of using autopilot to land. That gets us to the end of episode 18 of The Voice in My Head. Listen, if there's anything I just said that would inspire you to pick up the tab at the 19th hole, if we were to sit down there for a meeting, feel free to buy me a virtual coffee instead. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/KNOPP. And KNOPP is spelled K-N-O-P-P. You can also find a transcript of this episode and a bunch of other goodies at knoppstudios.com. And if you want, we can get into the finer points of writing or whatever other things, maybe part of our copywriting course. But to talk to me about that or whatever else is on your mind, my email address, neil@knoppstudios.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Voice in My Head. I'm Neil Headley.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. If you're enjoying the podcast or like the work we're doing in the indie podcaster community, I ask you to tell just one fellow content creator that hasn't heard of this podcast or the work we're doing and share it with them. But more importantly, I hope you continue with me on this journey as the indie podcaster. Keep being you. Keep being great. And the question is, do I stay here? Will you be back? Are you gonna come back? Will you be back? Are you coming back?